Now, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Hi, it's John Williams again, and it's Wednesday again. So Terry Savage, the financial columnist, joins us, and let's dive right in with Terry. As we start today, Terry, I'll ask you, why are you calling the FBI? Hi, Terry.
Because I've got a friend at the FBI who's been really very helpful as a spokesperson. I'm not going in the back door of the FBI, mm-hmm. in keeping me updated as possible on the FBI's investigation into this, not just Illinois, but national wave of fraud that relates to unemployment benefits. And I actually gave her your private line, if you don't mind, in case she will call in. We talked last week, as you remember, in the middle of the show.
Yeah.
I had to get back to her earlier today to see if there's anything new. Look, the FBI is investigating a national wave of fraud that will go into the billions of unemployment money that was put away, handed out illegally through fraud using people's stolen identities. Now, it was interesting to hear how close they're getting, if they think they'll ever get it back or if they get the people. But for the real problem is, for everybody out there who doesn't even think it's a problem that applies to them, the real issue is, wait a minute, what about when you get a 1099 in January or February saying, okay, we have your name, address, and Social Security number, and we see that you received in March, April, May, and June, you know, $11,812 in unemployment benefits, so please pay the 30% or whatever it is in taxes. That is going to be scary. I'm going to write a column next week on what the IRS says you should do in terms of protecting your tax filings. But as I keep saying to the IRS, that's not going to help when people start calling and saying, you sent me a 1099 and I didn't get the money. It's something I would like to think maybe it won't happen, but I know it will.
Has there been cases? I know there's always been identity theft and people maybe using unemployment benefits as a means to steal. But has there ever been anything like this before?
No, for two reasons. First of all, we had widespread breaches that, you know, we've talked about over the years and most recently. I mean, but sure, some company would lose your credit card information and somebody might have had access. But when we had the Equifax breach, what it really did was open the door to a vast database, names, address, Social Security numbers, and birth dates, very important. So, number two, we never had, I mean, I was always wondering what they would do with that data. I mean, are they going to go open a new account at TJ Maxx or, some department, Bloomingdale's, Macy's? No, what really happened is they saw a vast open gate to siphoning money off, not from traditional unemployment benefits, where unemployment does call your employer and say, did you lay Jane off or Tom off? And they go, who? You know, then they know that's fraud at the unemployment. But when there came this unemployment for self-employed people, where you just had to upload your W-2s, your 1099s, I should say, you didn't get a W-2 and qualify for benefits, that opened the door, and it started out on the West Coast, hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's moved through in various forms. That's what the FBI is investigating, but a whole lot of money, not just onesies, twosies, but thousands and thousands at a time got through the system, opened up new bank accounts using your name, address, Social Security number, and birth date, but they didn't use your address typically. They said it's an online account, so send it to this email address. Well, it wasn't yours, SusieSmith@gmail.com. It was SSMTH at something else, something you'd never know about. And so the contacts were all made through fraudulent email addresses, bank accounts that were set up fraudulently, and you would never know.
There's some really interesting points there, Terry. One of them to me being the fact that Equifax breach about not long after, before then, you had the Target one as well. And all of this information, all of this opportunity was floating out there. But these new government programs for self-employed people were the window that they were waiting for. So that data was just sitting out there. And now they've had a chance to capitalize on it. And the question I have for you after the break is, do you think it's one person or one small little network of people that are wound together on this? Or is it a whole sea of people that have figured out how to scam us and are taking advantage of it? If the FBI is working on this, I wonder how vast the criminal enterprise is. We'll pick it up here in just a minute. And then we take your phone calls, 312-981-7200. Okay, Terry Savage, lots of phone calls for you, but
well,
answer that one question.
Something. All right, I want to answer your question. This will put this in perspective. How about this for a headline from the L.A. Times a couple days ago?
Okay.
California's prisoner unemployment fraud now estimated at $400 million, say officials. They have so far identified $400 million paid on some 21,000 unemployment benefit claims improperly filed in the names of prison inmates. They don't, money was sent both to the prisoners on their, on cards that they could use in jail or to their family members outside of jail who funneled cash back to them. And $400 million in one state, California, just, and of course everybody there is outraged. Look, they say we still have people like in Illinois who did, whose genuine real unemployment claims haven't been processed and there are glitches in their systems, but they attribute this to that self-employed PUI unemployment,
yeah,
where you self-certify, and if it's $400 million, 21,000 California inmates, including some very notorious ones, 21,000, I forget how many thousands on death row, the fact is that it didn't take a global scheme,
right,
although I'm sure
right,
that's going on, the dark web. I don't know how the FBI will ever grab a hold of this.
And how many they would have to grab a hold of. I mean, it sounds endemic that
exactly
way.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, here's some phone calls for you, Terry. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. This is WGN, and Lonnie, we'll start with you. How can we help?
I just refinanced on Monday. Went in to see my banker and to start the refinance cycle. And within 2 days now, I have gotten telephone calls from people using my first name, knowing that I am looking to refinance and wanting to quote me, and they're not the people. So if I ask them what a 20-year can potentially, what the interest rates are, they can't give that to me. They want to pass me on to somebody else right away.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How are these people getting this information so quickly?
I want to know, did you, even before you went in, did you ever Google refinance rates or anything like that? Did you go to any of the online sites that, you know, compare rates and so forth? Just in the weeks before you even refinanced?
No, I didn't. I have not done that.
Well, I'm surprised.
I've got a banker that I like.
Okay, so you never went online. Your spouse didn't go online. Nothing like that. Then you have a beef with your, I'm going to ask you out loud. What bank was that where you refinanced?
It's in McHenry here, First Midwest.
Okay, I think you need to contact First Midwest about their privacy policy. Tell them this has happened and tell them you're going to call back next week and report to Terry Savage, because that's shocking. You can expect, of course, I mean, I can't go online to look for a new throw pillow on Wayfair without getting, you know, 20 emails. We found throw pillows you might like. I mean, that's cookies. They know where you've been. But if you never did go online asking about mortgage rates, then they somehow revealed your information, and maybe their mortgage professional was doing a search of where they were going to farm out that mortgage refinance to, and that wasn't secure. But either way, that's illegal. It violates bank privacy laws. So do me a favor, either go post it on my blog after you get an answer or call back next week. That's frightening.
TerrySavage.com. Lonnie, good luck to you. We're going to Danny next. You're on WGN. Let's try and help you, Danny. What can we do for you?
Yes, hi. Ms. Savage, I'm asking about the, at 2018, I fell out of income tax, and my accountant said that I didn't owe taxes, but then she said that if they send me a letter, let her know. So when 2019 came around, I filled out the income tax. And then 4 months later, the IRS and the state, they send me a letter saying I owe them interest on for 2018. Now I was just wondering who's responsible. Is the accountant or the IRS that not sending me a letter?
So here's the question. This isn't about the stimulus, which I thought it might be. Did you not get any communication from either the state or
No, I didn't get
government?
Anything. No letter, nothing. And then I called them. And I called the IRS, and the supervisor wasn't in, so he told me to call back, but I never did. And he just apologized. I don't know. Then I called the state, and he didn't have any answers for me.
Okay, so they say you owe money plus the interest, right? They owe money on your tax returns plus And I want to know something. I don't want to know the name, but who prepared your return? Was it a large service like H&R Block?
No, it was somebody on the block, MGR.
Yeah, well, okay.
Called.
These days, you want to do, you know, millions of people are using places like TurboTax, and they have guarantees. I think you need to, first of all, contact that tax preparer and say you're going to take this to court because, number one, you didn't know that you owed money. They obviously made a mistake, and she had requested you contact her, the person you mentioned. And number two, you haven't gotten any communication directly from the IRS, so you want to find out if you signed over any rights of communication to have them contact her about your tax return. That usually doesn't happen, but I'm surprised that you didn't get any communication before this time.
But let me ask this,
though. I think you need to duke it out with that person,
yeah,
and then file a complaint with the Illinois State. You have to be registered to be a CPA and file tax returns. But I think you've got a good argument that they owe you, if not the back taxes, at least the interest that you're being asked to pay.
Well, then if you do, in fact, say the IRS audits you and they determine that, in fact, your 2018 return was inaccurate, you do owe them money and or interest, and your accountant signed off on that, you're still liable, though, right?
I mean, yeah, you're still liable for the back taxes. That's what I'm saying. But I think, first of all, you're not going to go use that accountant firm anymore or that accountant person. But number two, I think you've got to find out why you never heard about this till now. Was this the IRS's first communication? Did it go to her instead of you earlier on? And for sure, that person should be chipping in any interest on the amount underpaid. And then you got to get, don't just not call. Follow up on this. Get this sorted out. You don't want to be behind with the IRS and get penalties, and their interest rates are very high. So follow through on this. And I would suggest going to another CPA firm if you need to help you sort it out. Look at last year's return that you filed probably in July and make sure that it doesn't affect last year's tax return. You need other professional help. The interest, I hope, is relatively a small amount, but here's a warning. Use professionals that give guarantees when your taxes are done because you don't want to get crosswise with the IRS.
Danny, good luck. I'm going from you to Nate now. You're on WGN. Nate, how can we help you? You're on the air.
Yeah, I own a small business in northern Illinois, and I last month I received a letter stating that I had applied for unemployment benefits. I'm the owner of the company. I'm not unemployed, and I've never have been, knock on wood. But I immediately called IDES and registered for their callback because they won't take a phone call now. And I have gotten a couple phone calls that I've missed because they call it weird hours. But as the employer, I also filed a fraudulent fax and fraudulent information. So now they've come through and said that they denied my claim after they sent me the debit card in the mail, and I did receive the debit card and haven't used it. And now they're telling me that my claim has been denied, and now I owe them the money back, and that they're going to garnish my wages because I owe them the money and my claim was fraudulent. But I've never taken
Stop
the money.
Right now. Boy, you've let this go on too long. If you go to terrysavage.com on the home page, scroll down a little bit below the blue box that says Financial Links and Resources, and you're going to see a little box that says Identity Theft. Do this. And it will give you a step-by-step on what to do. Now, first of all, you have been, let's make two things clear. You've been the victim of identity theft.
Thank you. He's the victim of a crime here. He's
you
not
are the
a
victim.
Criminal.
The fact that this happened and you never would have applied means someone got your information, applied, and they somehow got money. So let's start with that. So you, number one, need to go look at your credit report at all three bureaus. There's a link to each one in that column.
Yep.
And look for an inquiry from a bank. That's the bank where the money, probably the money went in this fraud. You need to contact that bank. I'm sure the money won't still be there, but you need to file a report and keep a copy of it. You need to call the FBI because you're a business owner. So 1-800-CALL-FBI. You must do that right away.
All right.
So that
we're out of time,
so that
for this
you
segment.
Can get a report.
Nate, I put Nate on hold. I want to just talk further to Pete off the air. If there's anything else we need to know about this, we'll resolve it on the other side. But that's just good information, and we get that kind of call every single week. So hang in there and follow Terry's advice. And we'll get you more WGN Radio News headlines and more information from Terry after this. Sure, a while ago, one of our listeners called in and said that he was getting calls from people trying to sell him a mortgage after he went to his local bank. And he mentioned the bank, and Terry suggested that that's probably not kosher. If he wasn't Googling around, then he should not have been getting calls from the bank or people that were working with the bank, right? They should not have revealed his information. Anyway, we got a text that says, hey, I work for that bank, not in the mortgage department, but in lending, and I know that our privacy policy is extremely strict. I don't know why this man is getting the phone calls, but he was defending that bank's policy and how well they adhere to it. Terry Savage is on a phone line. She is the financial columnist, and our number is 312-981-7200. Terry, I wanted
to follow up on that. I'm sure the bank's policies are strict. Every bank's privacy policies are strict. That's why I wanted him to bring it to their attention. If he was sure there was no other way that he was looking around online, then he should bring it to their attention because it could have been the only way. And they would want to know about that in case there was some process they have internally where they were checking rates around and may have put his name in there. So, yeah, absolutely. I'm not blaming that bank. I'm just saying the bank would want to know as long as he's sure. I want to make two quick points. A lot of people have called in about the mortgage assistance program, the one the IDA, Illinois Housing Development Authority, is involved with. I've just had an update. They are not letting you know until December 30th, which is the date by which all funds must be distributed, and about half the applicants, and I don't know if that means half the money requested, but half the applicants to that program will receive money and half won't, and they are working with lenders to ascertain that you really do qualify, so they're not giving out a list. They're not saying to you, you didn't get it, go find some other help, and they aren't saying, you're getting it, we're working with your lender, and if we find it's okay, you're going to get help. It's just another big black hole of government not recognizing the pain and anguish this causes. So if you're waiting for the mortgage assistance program, the best I could tell you is you'll know for sure by December 30th. That's number one. This week is the deadline on the 15th for that small business health insurance plan. I'm not going to go describe it again, but if you're a small business with at least two employees, you and someone else, and even if someone else doesn't agree to want to take it, you can get the best health insurance offered to any corporation in your state by applying through this special enrollment program that ends December 15th. Go to terrysavage.com, scroll down under columns, small business health insurance deal. I mean, act today because you got to get the paperwork in. But you will probably find out. I've heard from so many small businesses. Remember, I get nothing out of this. I recommended two sources of help, one right here in Illinois. One is eHealth Insurance. The insurance companies don't love to do this business. A lot of insurance agents don't want to aggravate their insurance companies they work with. But these are two places where you can get into that program and get better health insurance perhaps than you have, or at least affordable and extensive coverage that you didn't know about.
eHealth Insurance is one of them, huh?
Right, exactly. InvestaBenefits.com in Illinois, V-E-S-T-A. But go look at TerrySavage.com, and you'll see the links to both those.
What do you want to say about student loans today, Terry?
Well, let's take the umbrella over that. I know people want questions answered, but right now, as we speak literally, Congress is finally, there's a break in the monolith of the leadership on both the left and the right. And a group of 50, I believe it is, of both Republicans and Democrats, equally divided, and also the Senate and the House, have come together with a kind of a compromise deal, a little over $900 billion, that is going to make everybody sort of unhappy. But there are a number of Republicans and Democrats now speaking out saying we cannot go home, we as Congress, without dealing with these following issues. Unemployment benefits for 11 million people will end the day after Christmas because they've had their 39 weeks and that's it. Forget those extra benefits. Unless something is done by this administration, evictions and mortgage foreclosures were stayed till the end of the year. That could start happening in January. And remember, in Illinois, the governor's prohibition on evictions for rent is only till December 12th, which is like next week. So not to mention stimulus for people that really can't make it. there's just so much at stake, and the student loan forbearance on interest is set to expire at the end of the year. So the big issue now in Washington is, could Congress possibly consciously go home for a Christmas break when 11 million people will lose unemployment benefits, when millions more are worried about being evicted, you know, on New Year's Day or right afterwards? This is huge. It's a huge issue. And finally, we saw a crack, not from the leadership, but from a group of senators and congresspeople who both parties said, wait, we got to get something done. So that's the big thing. Student loans, let's talk about that when we see what the next administration proposes. It's
got
a big
it.
Topic.
Got it. And one last thing about that. We did talk to Congressman Krishnamurthy about that $900 billion bipartisan bill, which will not include $1,200 checks for people or an unemployment stimulus, an unemployment benefit boost. But it would provide a few hundred million dollars to small businesses, and that might eventually find its way to the pockets of other citizens.
Right. And it wouldn't be a boost, you know, like the 600 or then some people got 300,
right.
But it would be an extension of benefits. I mean, we're going to have people who are not getting more than $250 or maybe $129 or whatever it is, people who will get zero right after Christmas. I mean, this is just unthinkable. You know what makes it so unthinkable is that we only need a bridge.
Yeah.
We only need a bridge to when this economy reopens as vaccines are distributed. We can see the end of the tunnel here, and we only need this bridge. How incredible the Congress hasn't acted already, and they must act before they go home.
Raja said he'd vote for it as it is written. He hasn't read it entirely, but he's leaning into it. He just hasn't read the details. But maybe that will be the one that gets passed. But I think that'll disappoint some people who are hoping they'd get $1,200. At $1,200,
means a lot.
Oh yeah,
but then there'll be a chance to go back at it in a more reasonable way, maybe in the next Congress. Okay, questions. I'm sorry to take so much time.
We're out of time.
We're out of time?
Yes, we are.
Okay, then tell people to. I think I've almost caught up with answering questions. Every time we go on the air, I get inundated. I'm practically caught up. TerrySavage.com posted on my blog. I know there are so many of you out there who have a problem with the Illinois Department of Employment Security, IDES. I know you're not getting callbacks. I want to say this out loud. Go buy 3 burner phones. Carry them around with you all the time. File 3 times for a callback with 3 different numbers. It at least increase your chances of getting a callback. That is outrageous that I would have to give that advice. I can't help you get recertified. It's a dense wall, and nobody's talking about it there. So unemployment, I really can't do it. Your stimulus, I know you have a half a minute here. If you didn't get your stimulus check, I'll write another column soon. You will be able to get a credit for it when you file this year's tax return, 2020, in April or January or February. You can file for 2020. You can apply for a refundable credit if you were eligible for the original $1,200 stimulus and didn't get it. So those are the top topics on everyone's mind. Unemployment, I wish I could help. Stimulus, you'll get another crack at it. And anything else, TerrySavage.com.
Terry, if I get one of those IDES debit cards and I know I don't deserve one, I wasn't unemployed, that's all you need to know about whether or not you were scammed. And cutting it up or throwing it away or not using it does not absolve you of the problems that you're going to face or the fixes you need to get working on.
Exactly. Read under the far right box, identity theft, do this on the homepage of TerrySavage.com under the financial links. And go to work doing that. Keep track of every effort you make to report to the IDES, to the FBI, to your police department, because you're going to get a 1099 next year. If money went out under your Social Security number, it's going to be a huge mess. That's going to keep us busy all spring, John.
TerrySavage.com. Thank you, Terry. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, John.
Have a good day. I know there's a lot of information there, but I just thought we could tie that up, that little bow at the end. If you got one of those debit cards and you don't need one of those debit cards, cutting it up, throwing it away doesn't fix your problem. You are now a target. You need to get going. It's 12:45 into the WGN Radio Newsroom. We go on the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Business leaders in the Chicago area say they're optimistic about how economic conditions will fare under President-elect Joe Biden. The Harris Poll Chicago Executive Pulse Survey, conducted in partnership with Crane Chicago Business, shows business leaders also concerned about the fiscal future of Chicago and the state of Illinois, especially since little has been done to fix the pension problem in the state. An effort to add landmark protections for hundreds of buildings in Chicago's Pilsen neighborhood is dead. The proposal failed to win approval from a city council committee. The measure would have given landmark status to more than 900 buildings, making the city's largest landmark district and first in a Latino-majority neighborhood. Building owners objected to the proposal, fearing it would increase the displacement of longtime residents and promote gentrification. Keep your eyes peeled for specially wrapped Amazon holiday vans. They're making deliveries across Chicago, and if you find one, you could win cash for yourself and help out a good cause at the same time. Chicago Inno says if you spot one of the vans, post a picture on social media, you could win a $250 Amazon gift card, and another $250 will be given to one of three local nonprofits, including Northern Illinois Food Bank, My Block, My Hood, My City, and Make-A-Wish Illinois. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Haven Allen joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, Chief Executive Officer and the co-founder of M-Hub in Chicago. Haven, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, John.
Tell us what your business does.
Yeah, I mean, we're a three-and-a-half-year-old organization that supports hard tech and manufacturers develop new products and launch new businesses. We've supported about 350 companies over the last 3.5 years that have attracted more than $320 million in investment capital, generated $110 million in revenue, pulled about 400 patents, but have created 1,300 new jobs in just 3.5 years.
I know that you've got another opportunity for people to apply for grants. Folks would get training and $75,000 towards their projects. But what's hard tech? What does that even mean?
Yeah, it's for us, you know, there's been this huge movement with the advent of cell phones, 5G technologies and whatnot, where it allows traditional hardware to overlay digital technologies to create a whole new slew of devices that can do edge computing to creating new original data sets, which, you know, creating new opportunities from everything from like Livongos of the world to, you know, one of our more exciting companies that launched a company called DartHat. Where they create an industrial wearable that provides all sorts of insights for a manufacturing company, from access control to safety, security, communication, and tracking vitals of production workers.
I can come up with an app, maybe even some software, but is the idea that what you're investing in requires more capital and maybe more than the average startup could possibly muster?
Yeah, no, I mean, the old adage is hard tech is hard. We like to think that we're making it easy or easier. At M-Hub, you know, we have 270 active companies today, over 600 engineers that you can tap into for short-term R&D projects. And there's a lot of collaboration between teams, but then also a lot of project-based work that's going on with the local industry. And beyond that, you know, there's a full prototyping lab where you can – you know, do everything from 3D printing, printing your circuit boards, CNC metal cutting, and then try to match that with a whole host of manufacturing networks to help you scale up your products, to business and leadership training. We just spent a lot of time on not just building the product, but how do you build the sustainable and business leadership capacity needed to launch a business. And as you alluded to with your last question, you know, this past August, we did a first close on a pre-seed venture fund, which will now allow us to start investing directly in these early stage great ideas that are aligned with what we're seeing from industry. And, you know, we have our applications open for the first 10 investments that we'll make in the advanced manufacturing and industrial Internet of Things space. So really looking at companies doing everything from access control, monitoring, robotics, machine-to-machine communication, all things in automation. And then come this April, we'll open up our next call for proposals for a cohort focused on medical technologies. I mean, we really have a broad reach being in the hard tech space that goes from energy tech to smart mobility, advanced manufacturing, medical technologies. And it's just a really exciting time in this space. And then, you know, just perfectly situated with all the talent and industry that we have around us here in Chicago and the Midwest to really accelerate the growth of this type of startup.
One last thing. Do you acquire part ownership? What's in it for you?
The 270 companies that operate out of MHUB right now, we do not take ownership in. They pay a monthly fee and leverage the resources, and it's very reasonable. You pay $350 a month. You get access to all that engineering talent, our courses, our 80-course curriculum, as well as all the prototyping and other event activities. If you do participate in the Accelerator and the Venture Fund, yeah, we are making an investment in your company. We're going to give you $75,000 cash, another $55,000 worth of engineering, design, and program-related support, but then really support each team through a very intense six-month program where we'll build their product, their supply chain. We have corporates lined up to provide pilot opportunities, but then build that business and leadership capacity and connections with local investors. And then beyond that, you continue to have access to MHUB's full resource and networks for another 18 months. So really trying to de-risk these companies, connect them with industry, accelerate their growth, and we will take 5% equity in each team that participates.
Haven Allen is the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of MHUB. To find out more, MHUB Chicago, mhubchicago.com. Fascinating, Haven. We'll follow up. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much, John. Look forward to connecting again.